Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 7, The Killing of the Demon Trinavrata, text 12. Purvavat stapitam gopaye.
Purvavat stapitam gopaye.
Balibhisa paricharam.
Balibhisa paricharam.
Vipra hutvachayam chakrur.
Vipra hutvachayam chakrur.
Dadhyat shatta kushambhubhi.
Dadhyat shatta kushambhubhi.
Purvavat stapitam gopaye.
Purvavat stapitam gopaye.
Balibhisa paricchadam.
Balibhisa paricchadam.
Viprahutvachayam chakru.
Viprahutvachayam chakru.
Dadhyakshatta kushambhubi.
Dadhyakshatta kushambhubi.
Purvavat stapitam gopaye.
Purvavat stapitam gopaye.
Balibhisa paricchadam.
Balibhisa paricchadam.
Viprahutvachayam chakru.
Viprahutvachayam chakru.
Dadhyakshatta kushambhubi.
Dadhyakshatta kushambhubi.
Purvavat.
Purvavat.
As the hand cart had been situated before. Stapitam.
Stapitam.
Again assembled.
Again assembled.
With a pot situated properly.
With
a pot situated properly.
Gopai. Gopai.
By the cowherd men.
By the cowherd men.
Baliji.
Baliji.
All of whom were very strong and stout.
All of whom were very strong and stout.
And who could therefore assemble the parts without difficulty.
And who could therefore assemble the parts without difficulty.
Saparichadam.
Saparichadam.
With all the paraphernalia kept on.
With all the paraphernalia kept on.
Vipra.
Vipra.
The Brahmanas.
The Brahmanas.
Buddha.
Buddha.
After performing a fire sacrifice.
Fire ceremony.
Archayam Chakru. Perform ritualistic ceremonies. Dadi. With curd. Akshata.
Grains of rice.
Kusha.
Kusha.
And Kusha grass.
Ambubhi.
With water.
Water.
Translation. After the strong, stout cowherd men assembled the pots and paraphernalia on the handcart and set it up as before, the Brahmanas performed a ritualistic ceremony with a fire sacrifice to appease the bad planet, and then, with rice grains, kusha, water, and curd, they worshipped the Supreme Lord. Purport. The handcart was loaded with heavy utensils and other paraphernalia. To set the cart back in its original position required much strength, but this was easily done by the cowherd men. Then, according to the system of the Gopa Jati, various Vedic ceremonies were performed to appease the calamitous situation. Om again to an Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Bhagavan Sri Dvaita Gadadhara Siva Sri Guru Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
In a sane civilization, for everything, there is a system. So the Gopas and Gopis are demonstrating how, when some calamity strikes, there's a system how to cope with that. that system is maintained by the most skilled members of society, the brahmanas. They know just what to do, and all of society respects them. The brahmanas know how to handle happiness and distress. This is a great achievement. How to deal with the comings and goings of happiness and distress. This is what upsets people so much. They don't know how to cope. 1 minute they think they're happy, the next minute disaster strikes. How to deal with all that? You can't deal with the onslaught of material nature without the guidance of the brahmanas. Just like recently, you know, there was the inundation of New Orleans, in which the city of a half million people was 80% covered by water. Now, as Americans know, disasters like that aren't supposed to happen in the USA. They should happen in Bangladesh, Burma, third world places. But in the topmost countries, there shouldn't be such natural disturbances. This is what people think. If 100,000 people can die in floods in Bangladesh, well, but if 10 Americans die, oh my God, the whole world has to know about it. So, as you know, the city of New Orleans was flooded. Even it was not by surprise. Last year, the government did like when the military does some kind of test situation. What do you call it? Activity. That's simulation. Let us simulate if the levees broke, if what holds back the water broke. Let's simulate that. They did last year. Still, they were not prepared. So, when the whole disaster happened, and the city had to empty out, and then the army was sent to keep people from looting and keep chaos from being total. And then the challenge subsided a bit. And as you know, most of you, New Orleans is famous for the supposed, it's the birthplace of jazz. So the mayor, he was trying to rally the people who all had to leave the city. And because all over the city were just military helicopters and army here and there. So the mayor said, to impart Divya Gyan to the people, he said, "I'm tired of hearing the sound of military helicopters in the air over our city. I want to hear jazz." 80% of the city is covered by water. He's meaning, you know, it's supposed to, you know, bring out the bhakti in the people. So, and then what else did he say? You know, in order to rally the people. You know, just like even in Vrindavan, they have their chief advisors and counselors amongst the cowherd men, Upananda and others, Nanda Maharaj, of course. Whenever there's something to be discussed, they gather in Nanda Maharaj's big assembly hall and they, you know, they try to come to some vision of what to do. So similarly, the mayor of New Orleans, he was trying to rally the people and also to get to show the world that the city was still alive. So he was making his needs of the city known. So, we want business. We want commerce. Let's get it going again. That's what life is all about, business and commerce. Then you know everything's okay. So, New Orleans, the nickname in the USA for New Orleans, like New York is known as the Big Apple. Detroit is known as the Motor City. New Orleans is known as the Big Easy. But suddenly the Big Easy becomes extraordinarily difficult. So then thousands of people were bussed out of the city because it was flooded to Dallas, Texas, Houston, Texas, 350 miles away. And then a few weeks later, another hurricane appears. And they had to evacuate all the people in Houston who had already been evacuated from New Orleans. So, this is material nature showing who is in charge. And showing that even from the material point of view, you can't deal with material disasters. Even if you're materially expert, it can't be done. Your only hope is to have some kind of advanced knowledge. And that's what the Brahmanas are demonstrating here. Oh, there's been a calamity. Krishna was under this cart, a cart loaded with so many pots and utensils. These pots and utensils were so heavy, in order to put it back together, strong men had to be called for. But how was it that little baby Krishna underneath the cart just kicked the cart with his legs, and that cart with all the paraphernalia just went crashing to the ground? No one could believe that little Krishna had done this, as you heard in preceding verses. They felt for sure there must be some strange, malefic planet at work, and maybe a ghost did it. They couldn't believe Krishna kicked down the cart. Now the fact was, as you know, that a ghost had taken shelter. A ghost demon had taken shelter in the cart, Shakadasa. But it wasn't so that the ghost had caused the cart to collapse. It was baby Krishna. But the adults couldn't believe that. Nor did Krishna want them to think that way. So, let us think about how immediately there's a civilized response from the Brahmanas. Let's do some yajnas. Let's do some ceremonies to counteract this bad influence of the planet. Mother Yashoda let them do that. But Mother Yashoda had her own test for whether the situation was all right or not. What was Mother Yashoda's test? The baby is sucking my breast, therefore the baby's out of danger. Very simple. Still, everything should be summoned for the protection of my child. Let the Brahmanas do their yajnas. Let it all go on. All for the protection of Krishna. Because Krishna needs our protection. Her Vatsalya Rasa is dictating to her in that way. Unless we protect Krishna, what will happen to him? In this way, you can see the sweetness of a real civilization. I was just reading in a book by my godbrother, a book to be published by my godbrother Tejas Prabhu, how Prabhupada once started almost crying and saying, about his disciples, "I'm so sorry, you have no idea what a family is. I'm so sorry, you have no idea what a family is." Because in the Western world, our families are broken so easily. It's considered normal to grow up in a broken home. So, actually, people have no idea of what a proper family is like and can do. And here in Braj Leela, you can see that. You can see the Leelas on so many different levels. The gopas and gopis know what to do with a child, how to have a child, how to raise a child. They know all these things. People, as we described last week, have no idea of this today. One devotee couple told me that before they were devotees, they were just, you know, young persons traveling in India. And so, boyfriend and girlfriend. And so as they were traveling, the girl, she's 19 or something, she sees the little Indian babies running in the village. So she just turns to her boyfriend and says, "Aren't they so cute? I want a baby." Yeah. So the guy, whatever you say. So then they began to just conceived a child under the stars in India, and they were discussing, well, we don't know what we're doing. We don't know why we're in this world, but the child will show us the way. This is considered fashionable, The child will lead us. The child will know. We don't know. We don't have a clue what's going on, but the child will know. Let this unborn child guide us. It sounded very New Agey, very enlightened, Well, this is the ignorance of today. Unless we hear of another standard, we'll never know. Even in India, all these disturbances are coming now. I was just talking with Braj Bihari, and he was saying how most Indian youth now, you cannot appeal to them based on religious sentiment. You have to use logic and reason and philosophy, just like you're speaking to a Westerner, because the religious sentiment among so many of the youth is gone. They get the TV, they get the movies. So you just can't coast like we used to do before. Just assume so many things. Bhagavan, Sri Krishna, Lord Ram, Kijai. Oh yes, my mother and grandmother talk like that, Kijai. It's not working like that anymore. They're seeing so much TV, so many movies, so their brains have become different. So just like in the USA in the 60s and 70s, there was a huge gap between the parents and the children. In the 60s and 70s, when Prabhupada began his Hare Krishna movement, the parents didn't have a clue, really, what their children were into. Parents didn't know anything about LSD and rock music and all these kind of things. So they just didn't know how to cope. They didn't even understand what was going on. So it was a big, gap in understanding between parents and children. And Prabhupada came along and, swept the fortunate children away, come with me, be Hare Krishnas. So, Raja Bihari was saying that similarly there's a gap now in India between the youth and the parents. The parents have no idea what so many of the youth are into, really, what they're really doing. In the cities we're talking about, maybe the big cities. The parents are still practicing some kind of ritualistic piety, religious sentiment, and then their kids, their minds absorbed in MTV and all the rap music and all sorts of wild stuff. The parents don't have a clue. This is what's going on. Just like in the 60s and 70s in the USA, the parents didn't have a clue, what their kids are into. So, of course, we can take advantage of any situation for preaching. That is the hallmark of someone who understands how to preach. Srila Prabhupada said that just like a business person, a true business person can make a profit in any situation, whether the price of rice is going up or down. If you're actually a Vaishya, you can profit. If you're an amateur, if you're not a real business person, you can only make a profit when the price is going up. But an expert business person can make a profit either way, anytime, any place. Similarly, a devotee should know how to use every situation for preaching, not just the so-called favorable, but also the unfavorable. Because in all circumstances, our business, our family business of preaching Lord Chaitanya's movement has to go on. Regardless of the planetary influences. It's always a topic of debate amongst devotees. How much does astrology apply to devotees? Maybe some of you have indulged in such debates. How transcendental are devotees? It's all individual. Just like there are the malefic planetary influences spoken about in this series of verses, there's also auspicious planetary influences, but beyond the auspicious planetary influence is what? It's the Krishna Graha. This is what Prahlad Maharaj said in the seventh canto. He said, I'm under the influence of the Krishna Graha. My actions are are under the influence of the Vaikuntha planets. Those are the grahas I operate under. So, it's very wonderful to take that into account. How much of our life can be under the influence of the Krishna graha, the topmost planet? If we arrange our life so that we're always having maximum Krishna content in our life, then the planetary influences on our life will change. It's difficult doing astrology for devotees in terms of predicting what will happen to them, because sometimes what happens seems to correspond to their chart, and other times not. So often, unknowing devotees, when their life corresponds to their chart in terms of things that happen to devotees, say, wow, astrology is so great. And then when something happens that the astrologer didn't see and wasn't in their chart, then they become bewildered. Oh. So that's why Prabhupada would say things like, three claps in front of the deities and your whole chart changes. Just to emphasize that point, that you can't reduce it all to some kind of formula. My chart says this, and therefore this is what's going to happen to me as a devotee. Sometimes it may seem that way, that it's happening according to your chart. Many times not. I've seen many extreme examples of misunderstanding this point. I remember when I was living in Los Angeles many years ago, Southern California, often a devotee would say, well, I had to get in trouble with this lady because, you know, it was in my chart, and it was just bound to happen. What can be done, you know? It's a very insufficient understanding, of course. There may be particular weather patterns in the air, but we should know how to protect ourselves. You may look in the sky and see it's rainy season, so you take steps to protect yourself from the rain. There's always various things swirling around in material existence, auspicious and inauspicious. In Kali Yuga, mostly everything is inauspicious. And the only solution is to go straight to the spiritual. That's the only solution in Kali Yuga. But it's very helpful to see the rituals and the civilization of a real human society. And you're getting a glimpse of that even in Braj Leela. That's the glory, one of the glories of Srila Prabhupada's purports. While handing you such a topmost transcendental situation, he's also giving lessons on how to live simply. And how to live a simple, uncluttered life under the direction of the brahmanas. So we need real brahmanas. That is our most important requirement for the future. We need a class of devotees who are able to give guidance based on their study and realization. To be a real brahmana Vaishnava requires training, personal guidance. Now, one thing I would like to explain to you all is what you are doing now is very important. So many of you are in your 20s, your 30s. Try to understand what's going to happen once you cross 40 as a devotee. You're probably not going to memorize so many verses, but once you're past 40. Basically, so much of what you accumulated now is going to power you the rest of your life. These are the formative years in Krishna consciousness when you're in your 20s and 30s. Now you can learn so many verses, now you can study so much shastra. By the time you're past 40 or so, you'll mostly be applying what you have learned. Generally speaking, especially when you're past 50. Now in the corporate world, they say life begins when you're 50. Because then the passions die down, supposedly, hopefully. And you've learned a lot from your mistakes. and so you can just concentrate on your career. What you should do now is not waste time. Don't look lightly at all the facility you have for filling your consciousness with Krishna Katha, filling your consciousness with devotional service. This is what's going to accumulate in you. And this will become your memories when you're in your 40s and 50s and 60s. And those are the kind of memories you want. Otherwise, under the influence of material nature, if you act in Rajagun and Tamagun, those will be the memories at the end of your life, and that is hellish. You see, it's not simply that you indulge in Maya when you're in your 20s and 30s, and then that's it. Say, okay, I'm over that. Let me get into spiritual life. You indulge, and you have to pay the price for that indulgence. The price is sinful reaction, of course. And also, that part of that sinful reaction is your mind becomes full of all those thoughts, and they boomerang back on you in your 50s and 60s. So the cleaner slate you can keep now, you'll be so happy later in your life. It may seem like a bit of an austerity right now. Gotta be austere, the symbol. Especially those of you who want to be brahmacharis, you don't have your Vedic queen, you know. But later, you'll be quite thankful. Whether you continue as a brahmachari or become a genuine householder, you'll be quite thankful that you accumulated these years of focus. Because you can build on those years for the rest of your life. And as you get older, once you cross 45 into your 50s, so much of your memories will be what you're doing now instead of sinful activities. And that's a great benediction. So right now, while you're in your 20s and 30s, accumulate as much knowledge and wisdom. Understand it's going to be your stock of wealth. 20 years from now, you're going to draw on it. But now, take in as much as you can. Srimad Bhagavatam. Take in as much as you can of hearing about Krishna, dedication to serving Krishna. This will form the core of your existence, the foundation upon which your life is built for later years. Very important. Don't waste time. You see, let me explain how material nature rips you off. When you're young, in your 20s and 30s, you have so much energy. But you're bewildered by passion. So though you have so much energy, the passion in your mind dissipates the use of so much of that energy. It's hard to focus. It's hard to commit, it's hard to remain regulated because of this passion burning in you, which is normal for when you're in your 20s and 30s. Okay. Then, when you're past 50, if you've kept your nose clean, the passions die down. And then you can actually think clearly. But what happens? You don't have the energy that you did when you were young. So this is how material nature rips you off. When you have energy, your mind is foolish. When your mind becomes a bit sober, then you don't have the energy. So therefore, if you can take the great privilege of focusing your youthful energies in spite of the passions that normally accompany you, you'll have a very profitable life. In other words, don't learn by experience. Experience has a price. You know that saying, experience is the best teacher? You've all heard that? But how many of you heard the second half? For a fool will learn no other way. So So if now you fill up the core of your heart with Krishna content, in spite of, you know, the mental influences, the physical influences, the fight with material nature, it'll pay off now and in the future. And you'll be so happy that you did this. You'll be so happy. Can you think of anything worse than your body is aging, you're over 50, and the mind is still passionate? Can you think of anything worse than that? So all the efforts you're making now to focus on Krishna, 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 you're reaping the benefits now, and you will be so happy about it later. You're forming your mental foundation for the rest of your life right now. The more vigorous attention you pay to forming that foundation, the more rewards you'll reap in the future. Don't just live for today. Do the best thing for today and for the future. Therefore, this program of devotional service is so superlative. Nothing can compare to it because it gives you the best now and in the future. And the future will come very quickly. My mother is 78, and I asked her, so what are your realizations? Now you're 78. She said, the main thing I think of is how quickly life went by. Now, when you're in your 20s and 30s, it doesn't seem like life is moving so quickly. But that's just the illusion of Maya and the consciousness. As you get past 50, it seems like time is just shooting by. Maybe when you can remember when you were a teenager, it seemed like time was just crawling. That's all in the mind. Later you'll see how quickly your life has passed. Therefore, Prabhupada would always urge us to make the best use of this short human form of life. A few years of sacrifice, you gain so much. All right. Any questions?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes we are informed there after our vision. Sometimes we are informed through family life, we have the war, and then we measure the 10 minutes. And otherwise we will see from the beginning
of the vision. That can be true, but not for everyone. You have to know who you're talking to. This was Daksha's presentation to Narada Muni. When Daksha was angry in the sixth canto, why you give my son sannyas? Don't you know they have to learn by experience? Those who renounce without experience are very weak in their renunciation. But you have given my son sannyas, and they have no experience, therefore you have done a great injury. So you have to know who you're talking to and administer the medicine accordingly. To just make a blanket statement that everyone should go through a certain kind of life so that they learn by experience, that's not good. You have to know who you're talking to. Some persons have the capacity to avoid the learning experience. And even if if some of those who have that capacity, even if they later find out they can't go on that way, what is the harm in trying? So, this is why the guidance of the guru and senior Vaishnavas is necessary. You know, different strokes for different folks. You've got to learn to see how to prescribe medicine according to the person. You have to know who you're dealing with. That's why it's always good to have a personal relationship with your spiritual master so that you can get that individualized guidance. So the statement you said is neither wrong nor right. It depends on who you're talking to. Is that okay? Yeah.
what the significance of Shatadharthura was. He didn't seem like a very harmful personality. He was just like hanging out in that car. Yes, what you said?
The insight I have is what you read. You read the same books I do. It's a bad influence. Krishna didn't want him around. So yeah, like, what else can be said? Just like in Kurukshetra. Actually, the Kauravas, they were good administrators. They had administrative ability. And the motivation of the battle of Kurukshetra was each side was thinking, I can take care of the people better than you. I'm a better... That's how Kshatriyas are. We can give better protection. Our team can give better protection to the people than your team. It's not that they were thinking simply, we'll win the war and we'll get all the money and the fame. No, they were Kshatriyas, so they had that motivation to protect people from hurt, while taking a bit of fame and sense gratification along with it, of course. Duryodhana and company, they actually had administrative ability. What was their only problem? They had a problem with Krishna. The Krishna wanted them out, and he wanted his men in. That's Bala Kurukshetra in a nutshell. From a material point of view, the Kauravas were far more qualified than any administrators of today. They just had a problem with Krishna. That's all, a problem with Krishna. The Krishna wanted them out. He wanted his men in. Change of government, you know. Through the Kurukshetra, yeah, election process. So, the ultimate deciding factor is always what Krishna wants. He didn't want Shakatasura around. And he had great fun kicking the cart. He was enjoying it. Anuman, did you ever kick something and make it collapse? No. Wasn't it fun when you were kicking something, watching it go through the air? You felt power, right? Now just see how good I did. So Krishna is a person. He enjoyed kicking the cart and making everything fly here and there. He wasn't worried about being hurt. His mother was, though. Oh, no. What is he could have been hurt. Krishna wasn't thinking like that. Then you have fun kicking this cart. And then Krishna watches everyone speculate. How did it happen? Could this little baby have done that? They're talking about him. He's causing Krishna kata. Anything else? Yeah.
Is it possible to take it out of this continuity of knowledge to the age of 40 and 50?
Yes. You can accumulate knowledge throughout your life, but I'm just saying, basically, from what I've seen, the memorization skills slow down greatly when you're past 40. Not so many devotees I know of, you know, go on memorizing shlokas at the pace they did in the 20s and 30s or in their 40s and 50s. What I do notice is in your past 45 into your 50s and so on, your ability to think deeply increases, but your ability to remember details decreases. You can grasp concepts much easier, but details slip you. But your mind, your Krishna conscious mind, handles death much better. Anything else?
All right.
Thank you very much. All the very short. Good evening. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.